Today on Rocket Pop, we've got a classic. We're going back to 1982 to revisit one of the most famous movies of all time, Steven Spielberg's E.T. the Extraterrestrial. It's the story of a 10-year-old boy who meets and becomes good friends with a little kind alien who's been marooned on Earth. And this movie, that really doesn't seem to have aged at all, takes viewers on an incredibly moving adventure exploring friendship, family dynamics, and how some beings can truly have a deep connection. As we unravel this story, we're going to dive into how it tackles the tough topics of loneliness, divorce, all through the eyes of a child. Plus, get ready for some Easter eggs as we spot the Christ-like references sprinkled throughout the film. It's funny, it's moving, you're going to enjoy it. So grab your Reese's Pieces and let's blast off into the world of E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
Rocket Pop is gone.
Welcome to Rocket Pop Reviews, giving Christian families a reliable source for reviews of movies, shows, books, and podcasts.
Every four computers now have primary control of critical vehicle function.
We're serious about the fun of entertainment.
Nice to be in orbit.
Roger, 0G, and I feel fine.
And now your hosts, Steve Manuel and Jeff Davenport.
Steven, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, 1982. This was the biggest movie of all time at that point. It
yes.
beat out Star Wars and
yes.
wasn't beaten in the box office until 11 years later with Steven Spielberg's Jurassic Park. This movie was, we're both old enough to remember, it was like a monument suddenly was constructed in America.
Absolutely.
So I'm curious, do you remember when you first saw this movie?
I was going to ask you this too, because I remember the movement and the hubbub around it more than watching the movie itself. I remember a couple of things about it. These are the days when you're listening to the radio a lot. We were listening to the radio. So we would listen to the radio going to school. We'd listen to the radio driving around town, doing errands with mom. And there was a bit where somebody had constructed like a comedy skit. And somebody, it was like a on the street reporter, E.T., your finger glows and your heart lights up. What happened to you? And then they would play clips of the hit songs of the day. Do you remember that?
Nope.
That was one of the things. What happened to you, E.T.? And then they played, Love's Been a Little Bit Hard on Me.
Oh,
E.T., E.T. Whatever. I just remember it was everywhere. I remember... everyone had an Atari 2600, which is the earliest game console in everybody's life. And it was this big news item. Atari has a movie property and is making a video game out of the movie E.T. and thinking, what? I'll be able to relive the hottest scenes from the E.T. movie on my Atari 2600. And for me, the Atari 2600 video game is how the theme song got into my head, and I grew to loathe the theme song to E.T. because it played on repeat. Anyways, as you and I talked about when we decided to review this movie, I remember cussing. There was cussing in this movie. That's all that I remembered from my, I don't know, 9-year-old head. So it was a long time before I saw this movie. I was probably in my 20s when I saw this movie.
Wow.
So anyways, that's my recollection.
I think what you're speaking to is this idea of the monoculture. There was a monoculture back then,
yes.
meaning that when there was a big movie, everyone saw that movie. This was not splintered culture. This was monoculture. And so the amount, I mean, when you look at the box office numbers, you're like, well, okay. This was $1982 dollars, and the percentage of Americans who saw this movie in a movie theater was insane. It was just insane. It was a touch point for everything. And so
the little
lines from the movies, they were in every comedy bit. They were all over the place. I remember the movie came out in the summer, but it wasn't till Thanksgiving. We were with my mom's family out in Tennessee. And I remember they were like, let's all go see a movie. So we all went and saw a movie, including my grandmother, this old woman from Nashville. She went, the fact that she went to go see this movie speaks to like, it was as if everyone was instructed at some point as an American, you're going to see this movie.
So it was released as a summer movie and you saw it at Thanksgiving?
Yes. I don't know how that happened. I somehow missed out on it. I don't know. We were busy.
No. I'm just amazed. It was in theaters for that long. We don't have movies like that anymore.
Go back and look at the number one movies back in the day. And look at how long movies were in the theater. Look at how long E.T. was in the theater, how long Top Gun, the original Top Gun, was in the theater, and how long Back to the Future was in the theater. They played in theaters 6-9 months.
Wow.
Insane. And people were still showing up to go see these movies. So
I just looked it up, Jeff. Extraterrestrial was exhibited in theaters for 81 weeks.
81 weeks. And then they would do re-releases like a few years later because there wasn't home video.
That's right.
This is how you'd see it again.
That's right. That's
insane.
Amazing.
So E.T., if you don't know it, it's a Steven Spielberg movie, probably the most famous American filmmaker of all time. It's the story of a little 10-year-old boy who lives in a split family. It's him, his mother, his older brother, and his little sister. They live in probably Northern California. And when we meet them, they're still in tumult. We never see the father, but we know that divorce has created this nuclear bomb in this family. And as we get to know Elliot, we realize he feels isolated, alone. He doesn't sit around going, the divorce has really made me sad. It's such good writing and such good filmmaking that we just know it. We know it in things that go on around him. So we've established him as a lonely kid. Even the kids he runs around with, which are his older brother's friends, they treat him like dirt. You're a nothing. You're a little nothing. And his little sister, Gertie, played by Drew Barrymore, she doesn't have much regard for Elliot either. So Elliot's alone. And then E.T. is, we meet him. A spaceship comes down and these little friendly aliens come out and they're there to gather plants from this planet. You get the sense they're planet hopping. And because the government shows up, because, you know, somehow the government knows something's going down with these aliens, the ship takes off and leaves E.T. there. And so E.T. meets Elliot and they strike up this friendship. And the whole movie is about their friendship and ultimately about how Elliot is going to help E.T. create a little phone home device that can bring the spaceship back so E.T. can go back home, which of course Elliot doesn't want because this has become his friend. It's become his very close friend, but he knows it's for the best that he goes home. So that's the plot engine of this movie.
Very simple story.
It's a very simple story. And yet it's told with such sophistication. It's told visually. Spielberg is such a visual film director that you get these beautiful moments. I mean, there are such iconic moments in this movie that we've taken it for granted. It's like you finally see Abraham Lincoln after looking at him on the $5 bill. You see some of these and you go, oh, the bike's riding past the moon.
That's where this is from.
The ball coming back out of the shed. The Reese's Pieces. There's just so many visual elements. To speak to that visual element, one other regard, there's a character. He's one of the top five characters, and he doesn't have a name. He's never named in this movie, but he's one of the government scientist guys who's on the track of E.T. And the only way we see him before about two-thirds of the way through the movie is he's got this jangling set of keys on his belt. And that's how we know him, is the jangling set of keys.
Whatever. Did you know that was the character name, is Keys?
Keys. He's listed as Keys.
Yeah.
And it's such a visual thing. They could have shown his face right off the bat and him going, we're going to chase this alien down. No. We never even hear him. We never hear dialogue from the government until he shows up late when they've discovered where E.T. is living.
Yeah. Can I say a couple of things about Spielberg? Mm. You mentioned him being a visual director. There are so many times when I think that was a choice. So one is the when you say the government is tromping through the forest looking for this alien creature. They framed it so that the guys tromping through the forest all stomp into a puddle and it all splashes. And I immediately thought, number one, you would not do that. If you had flashlights, you go, there's a puddle. I'm not stepping in the puddle. But for the camera, it makes walking through the forest, it turns it into an action thing.
Yeah.
That there's, there's something happened. Oh, there's disturbance. What I'm communicated disturbance.
And threat.
Yes.
These guys are so intent on finding him. They're smashing through this. They don't care. They're going after this thing.
It's crazy. Another thought that came when you talk about iconic moments, I did not remember this exact moment, but there's a moment in which a NASA spacesuit invades a home, and it's framed as really scary and threatening. Like, why would someone, we're used to seeing a man in a spacesuit. We've seen many of these movies, and he's in space. He's on a spaceship. Put that same spacesuit coming in unasked for into your home, and it's suddenly so foreign and threatening. I just thought, what a great idea. This is such a simple idea. This movie was always billed as, you know, Steven Spielberg had made Jaws and he made Duel and
Raiders at this point.
Yeah, Raiders. I've seen a great review of that movie recently somewhere online. Mm-hmm. And what these are all like, look at this thing. Like mm-hmm. there's an object that we're all supposed to be looking at. This movie was always billed as Spielberg's most personal movie. He's giving scenes, as he said, scenes from his own life. Mm-hmm. As he watched the dissolution of his own family. And he almost said that it was like a fantasy of his that someone would come from the outside, be his friend, and walk him through the trouble. So there's a lot of his heart, mm-hmm. I think, in the movie, which creates this sensitivity that you're talking about. I mean, he cared very much about the relationship between Elliot and E.T., and he wanted to put as much pathos into that as he possibly could.
I think that goes to the visual things that you're talking about. So those moments where the men are splashing, the NASA guy coming through, you watch those and go, now that's, they wouldn't step it that way, or NASA guy wouldn't come into the thing that way. But I'm realizing now what he was trying to do is there's this theme throughout that Elliot and E.T. are somehow bonded, that there is like an emotional connection with them. I think all of this movie is meant to feel subjective. So the splashing, that's how E.T. would experience these men tromping through.
Yeah.
Would someone really walk through the window that way? No, but that's how Elliot would experience that kind of thing. And though it's not first person camera, obviously, we get the sense of this is what it feels like for a child. Yes. Going really specifically to this is what it feels like for a child in the midst of divorce. There's such a heartbreaking, well done scene that has nothing to do with the alien. At the very beginning, the family sitting around the table, it's mom, Michael, who's 15, Elliot, who's about 10, and Gertie, who's 5. And they're talking about the eight, like we saw something. And then Elliot goes,
Dad would believe me.
And you just watch mom kind of, like, okay.
Everything and just goes, oh,
it, she goes,
maybe you ought to call your father and tell him about it.
I can't. He's in Mexico with Sally.
Mom freezes, and older brother is looking at Elliot like, I'm going to kill you. You just hurt mom's feelings. And Gertie goes,
where's Mexico?
The mom is like, it's okay, it's okay. She stands up, and she's just getting it, keeping it together, keeping it together. And then she turns around, is about to walk out of the room, and she goes, he hates Mexico. It's just this heartbreaking thing of how divorce has torn this family apart. And how Elliot is in dire need of someone to connect with. Now, in a terrible version of this movie, Elliot sits with E.T. and goes, you know, my dad's gone. You know, I could really use some guidance or friendship. We never do anything like that. Right. He just befriends this thing. And it's so wonderful. We've talked about in other reviews of movies where the actors are allowed to improvise. There are clearly moments where Spielberg looked at Elliot, played by Henry Thomas, who went on to graduate from Texas A&M University. He looked at Henry Thomas and said, look, just play around. How great is the scene where he brings Elliot into his room? They have random things on a table, and he just walks them through and goes, this is Greedo, and this is Hammerhead, and they fight. And this is a fake Coke. It's not real. We drink this, but this is a fake one. The shark eats the... You're like, oh my gosh, that is really how a kid talks, because that's a kid talking.
Absolutely. I thought that of that scene, like, surely was that written? Because with all of the short attention span theater of a kid going, these things do this, and then just moving on. Now this does this and this. But as you say, it's exactly how a kid talks.
If you were to go, okay, we've got someone coming from another planet. I need to explain life on Earth. This is not how you would do any of
Boba Fett. You'd start with, this is Boba Fett.
And right. this is a shark toy.
Yeah.
But that is exactly what a child would do. And, you know, I honestly picked this up from you, Stephen. Anytime throughout our friendship, we've watched a movie where a kid is in it, you are just about to lose your hair. And you go, that's not how children talk. And you've always been really sensitive to that. And
can I quote the origins of that thing?
Yeah, go right at it.
Was it a rom-com?
Yes, without the comedy very much.
Michelle Pfeiffer, George Clooney in One Fine Day.
That's it.
And she has a child and she's talking to her child and he looks up at her and says, I'm really nervous about tomorrow. I just wanted to stand up and throw a smoke bomb into the theater and go, it's illegitimate. That's not what any kid would say. We're all out of here. We're all leaving. And people go, well, I was kind of into it. No, the movie's over. We're all. So yes, I'm always sensitive to what they put in a kid's mouth. I don't know if you're going to talk about this. Forgive me if I'm stepping on your toes. But I remember all of the razzle dazzle around this person at the time, but I didn't remember how unbelievably cute, charming, and authentic Drew Barrymore was.
My girls were in love with her watching
unbelievably
this.
Wonderful. I just wanted
no guile.
Now let's do a show with this kid. Now let's put this kid in another movie. Let's have a show of this kid learning how to do the trapeze. I don't care what it is. Give me more of this kid.
When the brothers are like, they don't want her to talk about E.T. and they go, well, you can't say anything because, you know, adults can't see him. And she just turns up and then goes, give me a break.
There was a couple of laugh out loud lines in the movie and that was one of them.
She has
a knowing smirk. Give me a break.
When she dresses E.T. up. And it drives Elliot crazy because he dresses him like this woman clown or something.
Yeah.
By the way, we got to talk about the design of E.T. How close would this movie be, but really far away, if the design of E.T. was off? Somehow this thing is cute, but also like wise and like a grandparent, but also friendly with the big eyes. There's something about this that just strikes this very strange balance that just works.
Yes, I had a few thoughts about that. Now, forgive me, because you said in your opening about how it didn't age at all. Now, I thought that there were many things that made it seem very dated. I'll just put it that way. Very, very dated. And one of them was, We would never make a character like that. It was practical, meaning it was really there, which you like, and they got to interact with this thing. But, you know, you could see they had made this one part of its head to go up and down to make it look like some kind of thought is happening in it or whatever. It seemed very much like a mechanical toy to me. It was hard for me to kind of believe in this character. I also had the thought, as you're seeing these beings like struggle to walk at all. I'm thinking, if you have anything from outer space, we're going to assume they are in charge of their environment, right? Like if they can go through galaxies, could they not walk a few feet? I mean, they always had to cut away from E.T. anytime they wanted to move him somewhere and then cut back to him and watch him struggle. As you say, It was definitely something psychological to go, let's make him kind of low to the ground. That makes him seem vulnerable. Hmm. There was kind of an R2-D2 feel of him, which made him kind of cute. I like the elongated neck because when he's talking to Michael, he could go up to Michael's level, et cetera. but I thought the design was kind of strange, and they couldn't decide whether he was wet or dry. So it was clearly like a plastic, like a rubber sheathing over this thing. And then they would, I don't know, put some water droplets on it.
He was self-lubricating.
Anyways, his design, I totally agree. There was a lot of thought put into it, big eyes, etc. And obviously it worked. I think they sold a few toys. But yeah, it struck me as a little strange to watch again.
I think when I said it has aged well, I guess I mean thematically, and I mean how it's going about what it does. Yeah, I would say there's definitely, I mean, my girls, when they're flying, like, there's, I'm like, get ready, this is going to be awesome. The bikes are about to fly. And my girl's like, give me a break. No, just enjoy it. Like,
no. See if you can put yourself back in 1982.
In front of a green screen? No.
Is this a green screen, Dad? Dang it.
So obvious. So yes, there are some of those things. And there was I assume you watched the same version that I watched. There was a special edition that Spielberg did in, I think, about 1999, 2000, where he fixed a lot of that, but he also added some things. And even he said he regrets that and says, you don't monkey with the classic. You just leave it like it is. There were a few things he changed, and he was sad about that.
I had one thought to throw in on this topic, which was right at the beginning. The first scenes are E.T. kind of with his people and their spaceship. And I'm thinking, God bless him. I mean, maybe this was the most modern looking spaceship that had ever been captured on film. It looked like it was made out of garage spare parts for 2024 eyes. I thought, well, those are floodlights. He just attached several floodlights onto something. That's clearly one of those big, are they called Klieg lights that they show up for premieres? I mean, they put a bunch of those on the side of this. Even the walkway that they had, you can see it's wrought iron that they've welded together. And I'm thinking, probably if they came from outer space, it'd probably be a different material than like a wrought iron walkway.
Right.
It seemed kind of charming. It was almost like watching a 1950s show and going like, oh, that's made out of construction paper. You know, we can see that. But anyways,
I wouldn't mind that as much as the big lines around it, the cutout lines,
of course,
that let us know that those are the things that
of
really,
course.
Same with the kids riding the bikes. We've talked about this about other movies. To me, the litmus test of if I'm in on a movie is, can it make me feel what it's actually wanting me to feel?
Right.
And watching this movie, you know, I've seen this movie a number of times. I watched it with my girls a couple weeks ago. I felt everything it wanted me to feel. The heartbreak, I genuinely laughed out loud at lines I'd heard before, but laughed out loud at certain things. You feel the tension, the nervousness. And I mean, this movie's a known tearjerker at the end. Like, you've got to be feeling something at the end when everything comes to a climax. And especially the older you get and you understand, oh, this isn't just a movie about a kid and an alien. This is a movie about a kid who's really experienced loss and grief and doesn't know what to do with. And this being has become his friend. Man, it is such a, to me, it's beautiful, heartbreaking at the end. It made me feel emotions all along the way.
Just back to the character of E.T. In the setup, the very quick setup, where we understand there's somebody that wants to know something about E.T. and we don't like them. they're threatening. They seem like goofballs. I, one thing I noticed is just flashlights. Number one, all the guys that were the government, they all have a different color flashlight, which, okay, I know what you're trying to do visually there, and nobody has purple flashlights.
But that's a subjective thing. That's a subjective thing. The E.T. might have seen it that way. I think that's the excuse there.
But very Spielberg-y, when they're running around the woods, all of the flashlights are going everywhere. And I was thinking to myself, I don't think I've ever done that when I'm running through the woods. Probably I'm going to keep that flashlight right in front of me. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'll stop and look to the side. But they're just jangling everywhere. Again, it's the visual. This is Spielberg.
I think even he would go back and go, all right, All right, Stevie, back it off a little. A perfect example of this is you just know he's thinking visually. So it's right after that scene where I was talking about where Elliot has said something to his mom. It's after dinner and he goes to wash dishes. And so we get the shot is outside the window right in front of the sink. So now we're outside and he turns the sink on and it's hot. And so it steams. The amount of steam that comes up is you're like, what are we in Iceland? Even my girls go, what's going on with the sink?
Good point. I would like to throw out a couple of memories, things that take me back to the 80s, if I may. Number one, Bike culture.
You're right.
It's all over this movie. Kids on bikes. If you want to go to the school, if you want to go to the park, they all know the same lingo about it's the bald spot in the forest. Yes. Oh, I know where the bald spot is, of course. Because when I was a kid, I remember in seventh grade, I had a bike. And if I had made any lawn mowing money, me and the bros were going out on bikes and we're going to be gone for 5 hours and we're going to go to the North Oaks Mall. We're going to go to the magic shop and maybe buy some fake cigarettes that you can blow in and smoke comes out of the end of them.
Not allowed in my house.
Movie. We're definitely going to the arcade. That was just part of life. Mm-hmm. And it's in that movie, which I really appreciated. And it made me think of the Stranger Things ethic. Which Stranger Things, if you don't know this, America, is a direct takeoff of the movie E.T. So all of the ethic, even the time period that Stranger Things is supposed to be shot in, it's from E.T. This is origin material that we're watching. The second thing that came to mind, it just struck me so much when I saw it. In one of those early scenes when all the kids are over at the house, a kid gets on the phone to order a pizza. And I immediately remembered how we would get on the phone and not have any idea what we were talking about, who we were talking to. We don't know the menu at this place. There's no online menu to go look at, oh, they offer these toppings. And we would sit on the phone and go, now what toppings do you have? And listen to the list and go, and then, okay, just a second. Hey guys, they have this and this. And it's this long, sprawling, dawdling conversation because that's what being the phone was your one entry into the rest of the outside world. And we didn't know. Now, when we get on the phone, we have all the facts. We're going, this, I know you order this. I know you offer this concrete repair service. This is what I want. I'm at this address. Come here at this time. In those days, we'd get on the phone, just no idea where we're going with this phone call because we're on the phone primarily to get information,
not to give it. Well, a perfect example of this is call the movie theater to see what's showing and what times they're showing.
Yes. Just, I don't know what's showing at theater. You guys want us to go to a movie night? Yeah, that sounds fun. Let's call the number and see what's at the movie theater.
And you'd hear a recording that they would repeat. And next, Summer School, starring Mark Harmon, showing at 2:35.
That's right.
5:05.
That's right.
And they would just...
Now, is our review of Summer School coming up pretty soon?
I sure hope, because I loved that movie. All right, back to E.T. Yeah, so if you're older, you're going to have throwback stuff. And you're like, oh, I remember that. There's so much fun there. Some themes that come up. Obviously, loneliness is a big theme that comes up. As we've mentioned, divorce, it's not heavy-handed. If you're going to watch this with your children and they're like, what's divorce? You might need to do a little primer as you go into it.
One comment on this, which is I think that's one of the reasons that this was a stay-away movie for me when I'm 10 years old, because it was about divorce. And it's not about divorce, but there's a separated, broken family in this. And that always seemed like, I don't know that we're going to watch that movie. I understand that looking back at that time. However, the positive about this is that we're looking at a splintered family and the movie is clearly saying to us, that's not good.
It's not good.
It's looking at this family. They are struggling to get it together. Moms ordering a pizza is very normal in this family because mom has a job. She has a full-time job. She's asking the kids to watch other kids. She's trying to keep it together. It's not supposed to be this way. That's what the whole movie is saying. And I think that is a moral positive.
You remember when she puts on, they come down for Halloween, they're going to go out trick-or-treating, and she's wearing this weird, almost sexy cat outfit, and the kids are looking at each other like, who's
what is
this
she
lady?
Dressing for?
This is all a symptom of how bad all of this is.
Yes, that's right.
Ugh. Yeah.
And so, she lights a bunch of candles as if it could be in her she has a fantasy that this is going to end up as a romantic night because she's in this cute kitty cat outfit. And the kids are like, this is weird. And it ends up with her kind of tearfully blowing out these candles and kind of going, what did I expect out of this night?
And by the way, they don't, it's not heavy handed or anything. There's nothing to avoid.
There.
Really to me, probably the biggest theme is friendship. This idea of deep connection between E.T. and Elliot, which doesn't make any sense because E.T. can hardly talk. He pieces things together. And yet Elliot falls in love with this being, which leads to, and some of you may hear this and go, okay, you're stretching here. But I don't know. I think this has been fairly well established. So in the movie E.T., there is so much Christ imagery. So I'll just go through a little list here. We've got a supernatural being coming from the heavens down to the earth. Right. He doesn't want to interact with the powers that be. He wants to interact with the lowest of the low, these 10 to 15 year old mess of a family, kids, their friends. It's the lowest of the low. He does healings. He teaches them about things and gives them instructions. He says, be good. He is constantly persecuted. He brings life wherever he goes. You see this actually happening. He's connecting with people, showing empathy. Obviously he descends, he ascends. He's a gardener. We see that he's a gardener. And not to spoil things, but E.T. dies. And we don't understand the mechanics of this, but he comes back to life. And when he reappears to his friends, do you remember this? He's got like this white blanket over him in the back of the van, and he kind of holds his hands up.
Yeah, and there's a light shot behind him, and it's very messianic. I think we can easily say that.
It is so Christological. And at the end, when he goes and ascends back where he came from, he says to Elliot, I'll be right here. He's pointing at Elliot's heart. I will be here. Tell me, how jaded do you have to be to go, well, that's all coincidental?
Well, my reaction to that would be, I don't know that Spielberg would have said we're aiming in that direction. But I think when you paint a picture of the true fantasy, the best wishes of humanity, this is what you're describing. You're describing someone who knows more than me, comes down, gets on my level, can feel what I feel. That's the whole thing, is that Elliot and E.T., they merge in their spirits somehow. Mm-hmm. He can feel what I feel. It's okay if he leaves as long as he stays inside me. Like there's something that resonates with the human story. I don't know if he was trying to aim at Jesus, but he hit Jesus in the middle of the target.
Yes. Maybe for him, it was doing tropes that he's seen, Christological tropes within films. You know, he has obviously encyclopedic knowledge of film history.
Yes.
Maybe he's just drawing on those tropes. Doesn't matter. It's all there. It's all there. And so let's go to kind of the family factor. I'll say this first. I also in my head went, there's a lot of cusses. There's a lot of cussing in this movie. This one's going to be rough. I was shocked how wrong I was, how little there actually is. There's one funny cuss. Elliot gets really mad at that kitchen table scene, and he says something very inappropriate to his brother. It's also very funny. The mom kind of laughs at it. As you see that coming, just mute it. You'll be fine. Everything else is quite mild. Were you surprised like I was at how little there was compared to what I built up in my head?
Yes. Okay. There might have been six bad words in the whole movie.
Yes. And because they didn't stop down on them, I think they just kind of wash over. So there is obviously talk about divorce. There is some heart-wrenching elements here. When E.T. gets very, very sick, little kids go, I don't like this. This isn't a movie for little kids.
Agreed.
I would say we showed it to our 10-year-old daughter and our 12-year-old daughter. And our 10-year-old daughter is very sensitive about movies. She did great. She actually, she said that was a favorite. And I think it's because the journey it takes you on. And I can't remember if I waited till the end or if it was along the way going, anybody know what that's pointing to? Anybody know what that sort of looks like? I think I waited till the end to go, that's what it was. After it was over, they were like, that was great. I go, okay, real quick, let me hit some things. Comes down, dies, rise, and they're like, yeah, that's right, that's Jesus. So to me, I feel like it's, especially if your kids have watched a few things, 10 might be the youngest age, but 12 and up, I think this is a strong, good, fun, moving movie.
Great.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, I would probably pitch it a little bit older. I might say 12 or 13. Just because of those themes. But yeah, we're in the same ballpark.
You got to talk to your kids about it beforehand going in, especially about the divorce thing. But again, you can say, look how bad it is. Look how sad it is. And you don't have to sit on it. This is not a movie about divorce. It's a movie about a boy who has a friendship with an alien. Such sweet moments, such honest moments, such funny moments, such moving moments. I love E.T. It holds up. It's a great movie.
Thanks for listening to Rocket Pop Reviews. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with your friends. See you next time for another family-friendly review.